This is Main Street Weekend on Prairie Public. I'm Doug Hamilton. Thank you for joining us for our Radio Main Street all across North Dakota this Sunday morning. And this morning, our show will feature an episode of a new podcast by Fargoan Meg Luther Lindholm called Uplifted. Then a discussion with Lorraine Davis, the executive director of the Native American Development Center in Bismarck, followed by an essay by Jamestown's Bruce Berg. First, though, a news update from our news director, Dave Thompson.
The legislature's budget section has okayed the first round of state spending from the CARES Act. The state has received $1.25 billion from money set aside because of COVID-19. The first round amounts to around $406 million. Some of the money will be spent on reclaiming roughly 419 oil wells that were shut in and orphaned since January 1st. And the Department of Mineral Resources says this would keep roughly 1,000 oil field workers employed. Senate Minority Leader Joan Heckman of New Rockford questioned whether the federal government would allow the state to spend COVID money for this.
It may be a stretch too far, given the request is for staff, for workers.
But Mineral Resources Director Lynn Helms says these 419 wells were operating until February, when oil prices started to fall.
They were potentially viable at January crude oil prices. They absolutely will not be able to pay their costs, even their plugging and reclamation costs, at less than $50 a barrel. So for the foreseeable future, there is no money other than CARES Act money for these 419.
The legislature's budget section has also approved spending some money on the Department of Transportation's plan to use some of its $17.8 million allocation to set up kiosks in rural areas to facilitate driver's license renewals and vehicle registrations. Devil's Lake Republican Senator Dave Elke questioned that.
It just seems like kind of a sneaky way to use somebody else's money to pay something that should be part of DOT's budget.
State DOT Director Bill Panos says the kiosks will save people from having to travel to take care of those functions.
By giving rural areas, tribal nations, and areas across the state, actually, the opportunity to do both driver's license and motor vehicle services remotely, where they don't have to come in necessarily and need to interact with our employees or with other folks.
One state lawmaker voted against the CARES spending plan. Fargo Democratic Senator Tim Mathern said it should have gone to the full legislature in a special session. North Dakota State Tax Commissioner Ryan Rauschenberger says even though a lot of shopping moved online during March and April, he believes local retail activity will be ticking up now that stores are reopening.
When we get the data in a month or two, looking back at, say, June compared to April, we absolutely expect local brick-and-mortar retailers to have a rebound.
Rauschenberger says the question is, how much?
And how much have behaviors changed and shifted from retailers locally to online?
Rauschenberger says preliminary data showed a 500% spike in the number of North Dakotans doing their buying online in March and April. He says this will affect how the state's revenues will look as the 2021 legislature approaches.
We're seeing brick-and-mortar retail down, but online up. That's money that's not staying in the local economy. And that's something that we really need to keep an eye on, because that can absolutely have a ripple effect through income tax, sales tax, and other tax types, because that money just is going out of state.
Rauschenberger did say the revenue forecast on which Governor Burgum will prepare the executive budget will be a bit more challenging. Officials with the North Dakota High School Activities Association say planning is underway on how to run fall sports programs in the time of COVID-19.
The benefits and values that are learned from interscholastic activities, obviously it's kind of the core of our organization, and to not be able to participate in them is a huge loss for student athletes and for school morale and culture as a whole. So we're obviously very optimistic we can bring it back this year and get it going again.
Justin Fletchock is the assistant director of the North Dakota High School Activities Association. He says the association has developed a return to play committee. The committee, consisting of individuals from the health department, the superintendent of schools office, and the governor's office, among others. He says by having the groups work together, it might be possible to see fall sports return. Fletchock says football is already one area or modifications are starting to take place.
I did see one thing they had come up with so far was getting rid of the team boxes that they have to stay in from the 25-yard line to the 25-yard line so that they could spread out further. Things like that, you know, there's not going to be any gameplay changes, so to speak, but just little administrative changes they could do to try to help people stay safe when returning to play.
On Thursday morning, NDSU received a grant of nearly $20 million that will help the school set up a COVID-19 plan. The university says without the money, online classes might have resumed for another semester. Some of the funds are going to be used to introduce a hybrid system known as the HyFlex educational model. The system allows students and faculty who are vulnerable, in isolation or quarantine, to still have as close to a normal classroom experience as possible. NDSU President Dean Brashani.
We're also doing a lot of training of faculty, providing both faculty and staff with equipment to work at home if they need to work at home, providing cleaning materials around the campus, shielding for faculty and staff so that they're protected, a lot of advertising and promotion with students to how to take care of themselves, that they will be required to wear a face mask.
NDSU says students will not have to show proof of health concerns in order to take classes remotely. The school is going through the curriculum to see if it will have to split classes in order to meet state guidelines. UND will be requiring all students, faculty, staff, and visitors to start wearing face masks on campus effective immediately. The face covering requirement is designed to help stop the spread of COVID-19. Students, faculty, and staff will be provided 2 cloth face coverings at the beginning of this fall semester as they come back to campus. Exceptions include the outdoors if a 6-foot physical distance is maintained, dorm rooms, exercising or competing in sports, and some academic exemptions. The COVID-19 pandemic has not affected the recruiting efforts of the North Dakota National Guard.
We've had our best recruiting from March to the end of June of 2020 as we've had in the same time period for the previous 6 years.
National Guard Adjutant General Alan Dorman.
And I think a big reason is the quality of our people, the culture of our organization, and the opportunity to be part of something bigger than yourself and to give back to your community. And our citizens see that every time we call out the National Guard in North Dakota. That speaks volumes about who we are as North Dakotans in the North Dakota National Guard.
For Main Street Weekend, I'm Dave Thompson.
You're listening to Main Street Weekend on Prairie Public. I'm Doug Hamilton. Meg Luther Lindholm is a freelance public radio reporter. Over the years, she has produced special reports for Prairie Public, including a series about school bullying, Stand Up ND, and another about incarceration in North Dakota, Journeys Through Justice. You can find her work on our prairiepublic.org website. This morning, we'll share a sample of her latest work. It's a new podcast she calls Uplifted.
In this era of COVID quarantine or stay-at-home time, I needed something to do, and so decided to create this podcast, which I'm calling Uplifted. And really the way I describe it is a look at personal and global problems through a spiritual lens. So what can we do to try to make ourselves and our lives better and more in accordance with what I think are universal values of respect, equality, fairness, and really living our lives compassionately according to the golden rule? That seemed to me something that I felt I wanted to hear. And so I decided to create it.
Again, the podcast is called Uplifted, and it's a mix of art and information and wisdom, I think is a fair way to put this. Tell us about the piece we're going to hear today.
So in keeping with the times that we're living in, these days of COVID, which are so difficult and challenging for so many of us, I call this particular episode The Struggle to Juggle, meaning we, many of us, are trying to take care of our kids if we have kids. A lot of summer activities have been canceled, so we have kids at home, and how do we keep them busy? How do we keep our own lives going if we've lost a job How do we find a new job? Or if we're working, how do we keep up with the demands of the jobs we have? And so really, I see so many of us in this place of just trying to keep up with everything and feeling overwhelmed. And what can we do to try to reduce the stress and the feelings of anxiety of this time that we're living in?
So how often do you expect to produce a podcast?
Ha! As often as my kids and my other responsibilities will let me. It's really hard. I'm just always squeaking in a few minutes here and there. It's very hard to find the blocks of time that I personally thrive on to do the creative work that I do. So that is really one of the biggest challenges for me, is finding a sort of concentrated periods of time. My husband and I are trying to work out our schedules to give each other breaks and time to do the things that we need to do for ourselves and our children. And, you know, I think all of us are sort of in one way or another having to recreate and reinvent our lives. And it can be very overwhelming. And that really is what this episode speaks to, is that sense of overwhelm and how do we deal with it.
It features Jesse Veeder, North Dakota singer-songwriter, Aram Mitchell, a writer and wilderness guide, and Dr. Catherine Perlman, a licensed social worker. So without further ado, here's Meg Luther Lindholm's Uplifted.
So life in this age of COVID is still hard. Even though places are reopening, there's still a lot of apprehension and a lot that we're still trying to juggle from home. A lot of us are still dealing with the pressure of taking care of kids and either trying to find a job or keep up with the demands of the jobs we have. Either way, there's a lot on our plates and a lot of us are still feeling overwhelmed.
I'm like any mom working from home right now, any parent working from home right now. I wake up in the morning, we're like, I'm going to have a schedule, right? We're going to have breakfast and we're going to have, you know, some quiet time where I can work. And then we'll have lunch and we'll go outside. And then in between there somewhere, I'm supposed to be getting some work done.
Jesse Veeder is like a lot of parents who are struggling to raise their kids and manage their jobs. She's got two young daughters, ages 2 and 4. She's also juggling several jobs. She's a newspaper columnist. She does web design work. Plus, she helps her parents with their cattle ranch that's been in the family for generations. She's got her hands more than full.
What we try to do is morning, kind of cuddle, breakfast. I sit down at my computer, hopefully get maybe an hour of work done while they play and fight, and I have to intervene every, you know, 5 to 10 minutes and tell them to quit fighting. Then we have a little lunch, we go outside, it's nap time, rest time. I get a good solid, hopefully hour and a half to 2 hours of uninterrupted time to really attend to some of the things that I'm working on right now, or not, of course, not planning events, not planning concerts, trying to finish my album.
In addition to everything else, at her core, Jesse Veeder is a musician, a singer-songwriter. But to do music, she needs time alone, time away from everyone and everything else, time to find the creative inspiration that fuels her music, which fortunately she gets when her husband comes home at the end of the day and he can be the one taking care of their two young daughters. That's when Jesse can get away to walk the land she has loved her whole life, on the edge of the North Dakota Badlands, which if you haven't seen them, you should. They are stunning. Rocky layers formed into buttes of reddish-brown earth that roll in expansive waves as far as the eye can see. And it is here in nature where Jesse finds a lot of the inspiration she needs to write her songs, like this one, Raining.
Sun beats down, turning my pale skin brown, and I have been cold for months. I turn my face up.
That song is just about, you know, ranch living, when the sky opens up and changes your plans and sends you inside and gives you a moment to breathe, which I think is very fitting during this time, where we are asked to do nothing but sit back and, and control what we can control and leave the rest to God. And that's what that song is about. Been a saving grace for me is those walks. Get outside, clear my head, be by myself. It's literally the only time I get to myself. And I think that's important. I know it's always been important for my mental health to get out and get moving, even more so now.
So there's a writer named Aram Mitchell. He's actually a wilderness tour guide as well as a writer. He writes from a personal perspective about problems that we're really all dealing with. And in this case, it's about how do we keep the lives that we were living pre-COVID going while also reinventing our lives. And he writes about it in an essay called The Muscle of Our Collective Spirit.
The weight of the world right now is not familiar. It's hard to know what's required. There's a new variety of overwhelm, as for some the nature of work shifts and risks increase. Others are losing opportunities to work. The landscape of home life is terra nova, and waves of uncertainty lap and recede, leaving blank the etchings of our plans previously drawn in the sand. I don't know how each of us ought to reorient to our new shifting realities, but I'm confident in our human ability, our propensity even, to gradually, day by day, together, muscle our way into knowing and being in and renewing our world.
Sometimes, to just be in the world, one has to let go of all the expectations that we normally place on ourselves and our kids and our lives. I recently read a blog post by a licensed social worker named Catherine Perlman. She works with a lot of families. And this is what she had to say about life at home with her own kids. I say yes to almost everything. Can I make a banana cake with peanut butter frosting? Can I take apart your old computer? Can I dye my hair? Can I shave it off? Can I watch more television? Can I play more video games? Yes, yes, yes. Yes to anything that isn't dangerous and can be construed as an activity or fun or relaxing or just time-consuming. My kitchen is a disaster. The dishes pile up faster than I can blink. Staying above water is such a fine line. I've had to stop caring about the way my house typically looks. Letting go feels better than trying to live up to standards that feel not worth the effort right now. Catherine Perlman wrote this for the Family Coach blog, which she created as a way to help parents learn how to be better parents. And sometimes that means just letting go.
First of all, these are not normal times. And so we can't have normal expectations on ourselves or our kids or our families for how this is going to go. So it's normal with the current situation to have more crying, more tantrums from kids or parents, to have more disorganization, more feelings, just a lot more unusual behaviors going on at home right now. And that's okay. And I think if we can understand that this is not our typical lives and it shouldn't look typical, it feels less stressful in some ways. we're all struggling and suffering and trying to get through the best way that we know how. So for some people, the best way to get through is to bake or create art or do projects with their kids. And for other families, honestly, it's television and video games.
The good news is that this new normal won't last forever. We don't know exactly what's going to replace it or whether we'll go back to what life used to be, but it isn't going to stay like this forever.
So if you know that things can get back into place later, then it's easier to relax now and say, you know what? I need my kids to be on the TV right now for me, for my sanity, to survive.
And it helps to stop and say, you know what? I need a timeout.
And I think that is exactly what parents need to do. We need to pay attention to our own feelings so that we don't act out on them in negative ways with our kids or our partners. So for me, I can tell when I'm getting thin, you know, I can tell when my nerves are really fraying. And that's a point for me to tap out with my husband and say, like, I need to have an hour in my room by myself, or I need to go for a walk, or I need to cook in the kitchen, but not be bothered. Or even if you're a single parent, to say to your kids, like, this is an hour of screen time or quiet time, or everybody goes to the room and does whatever they want time. But I know that I'm going to need a little bit of time out.
And this relaxing our normal standards by taking a break, by saying yes to things that we wouldn't normally say yes to, is also about trying to maintain consistency with our children. If we say, no, you can't do that, and then our children argue with us when we're already very tired and we turn around and say, oh, okay, go ahead, then that kind of mixed message tells our kids that it's okay to argue and argue and argue because eventually we'll give in. And Catherine says that's actually worse than just taking your fatigue into account and going along with things that you might not normally say yes to. Again, these are not normal times. We have to give ourselves and our kids a break.
If you don't say no, there's no problem. Just say yes. The kid wants more TV. You don't feel like dealing. Just say yes. There's no problem with that. You're reinforcing nothing then. The problem is if you say no or you try to implement something and then there's the whining, complaining, and tantruming, and then you just give in. That's what we're reinforcing the behavior. And also now is a great time to ignore all annoying behaviors, all tantruming behaviors, you know, just to give ourselves a little bit of a break from feeling like we have to discipline everything or we're constantly trying to improve our kids or teach them a lesson. You know, sometimes we just have to let things go. And now is a great time to just let things go.
And we have to be willing to let go of the expectations we have for our own lives as well. Or maybe that means altering the way we normally live, doing things differently. That's okay too.
We need to have some realistic expectations. You know, for people who have work that they have to get done, you know, it might have to be done in a very non-traditional way. For me, you know, I might take a nap at 9 p.m. and then work till 3 in the morning when there's no, you know, nobody's around, but then I'll sleep in the next day. That works in my house. Other people might have to find ways, you know, that works in their house. And for them, it really may be more television for their kids or having younger kids taking on more things that they wouldn't normally do, like cooking or baking or watching younger siblings. And in other times, maybe this wouldn't be okay for us. But nowadays, it's going to have to be okay. Our houses are going to be messier. We're not going to clean in the same way we might normally clean. And that's just going to have to be okay. And I think if we can let go of some of what's supposed to be and what normally is and typically is, we can feel a lot better about what's actually going on.
That was Catherine Perlman, creator of the Family Coach blog. Sometimes it's just impossible to keep work and home life separate. Like just as I was about to record this, my daughter walked into the little makeshift recording studio I have in my bedroom closet. The same thing happened when I was interviewing Jesse Veeder, the singer-songwriter who lives in western North Dakota. We were talking about how creative her kids are, how her kids love her music and love to dance, and she writes songs for them. And almost as if on cue, her little daughter Edie, 4 years old, tapped on the door and walked in.
Hi, Edie, I'm on the phone. If you sit here, you have to be quiet, okay? Okay. I'm in her room. Do you like to sing with me? Can you say yes?
Yeah.
What's your favorite song? Maybe Tell Her Piggies Fly? Do you like that one?
I know. Oh, we can't get them to be quiet during the day, but when you want them to talk, they don't have words.
Despite whatever frustrations Jesse feels now as a parent trying to raise two young daughters while working, Jesse wrote the music that you're hearing at a time when she didn't have children and wanted desperately to be a mother. She says that she tried to visualize her children, and in that effort came this song, For You, Child.
I dreamed you on the prairie, on mountaintops and oceans wide, and I loved you before I met you. I sang you quiet lullabies. I dreamed your hair gold like your daddy. I dreamed hands capable and strong.
That song is about wanting a family and wanting and envisioning these children that I could see but didn't know if it was ever going to happen. My husband and I had been trying to become parents for 2 or 3 years. I think we had suffered about 3 or 4 miscarriages, and we just could not get our family started.
I wish you nothing but bright blue skies.
And now it means even more now that I have these two little daughters, and you know, they're making life so much more interesting and magical and wonderful and challenging and infuriating and all of the things, right?
Up on his shoulders, on a horse.
Revisiting that song, they're in that song, and it's very special to me.
In the garden. And I wrote you in a song. I wish you singing, I wish you laughter. I wish you free and running wild. I wish you nothing but bright blue skies and warm breezes for you, child. And I know you'll have worries, and I know trouble comes tonight. And in the morning, I'll be waiting just to see your eyes.
Should we sing Piggies Fly? This is a song that I wrote when Edie was a little baby, and I would rock her to bed at night, and it just sort of, it became our lullaby for both girls. Okay, sit up straight. Okay, ready?
You have blue eyes, I have brown eyes.
Your hair is blonde and mine has curls. You are small and I'm your mama. You're my beautiful baby girl. So dance and sing and twirl around. Jump until you touch the sky. Don't worry about a thing, sweet darling. I love you till the piggies fly.
Good job. Good job.
This is Aram again with a prayer for us as we navigate uncertain times. As we cross the threshold of each new day, may we find strength in the confidence that we're moving together. May we rest assured that yesterday's unknown will be a little more familiar tomorrow. And may we remember that right now, we just have to live today.
You've been listening to Uplifted, a podcast to raise your spirits in these troubled times. If you like this episode, I hope you'll share it with your circles. I want to thank Aram Mitchell, Jesse Veeder and her daughter Edie, and Dr. Catherine Perlman. You can find Catherine's Family Coach blog at thefamilycoach.com. You can find Jesse Veeder's music at jessevedermusic.com. I'm Meg Luther Lindholm.
You can find Meg's podcast, Uplifted, at prairiepublic.org. Select Listen, then Podcasts for an alphabetical listing of our podcasts.
Support for Prairie Public is provided by Tri-Valley Opportunity Council, offering the Foster Grandparent Program, a volunteer opportunity for older adults to assist kids with exceptional or special needs to be more successful in school. Volunteers are needed. Learn more at tvoc.org. Across the country, deaths from the coronavirus and of black men and women at the hands of law enforcement have left many feeling a profound sense of loss. On this week's Prairie Public Presents, we bring you stories of living and grieving in a time of COVID-19. Each SoundRich story crosses a line from before the pandemic to after. We'll explore how this time we're living in has impacted housing, the arts, and building community while living in isolation. Living and grieving in a time of COVID-19. Listen today at 5 p.m. Central, 4 Mountain on Prairie Public.
This is Main Street on Prairie Public. The mission of the Native American Development Center in Bismarck is to help people thrive. Lorraine Davis is the founder and executive director, and today she talks about a big grant from the Northwest Area Foundation with our Bill Thomas. The $200,000 grant will be used to study needs to improve infrastructure, develop the Native workforce, and maintain cultural connections in Bismarck, Fargo, and Grand Forks.
One of the things that interested me when I saw that Native Inca got this grant, and then I expected to see it was going to be on the reservations, but it's in the cities. It's Fargo, Bismarck, and Grand Forks. That's different in a way, but I guess there's a lot of indigenous people in those cities, right?
Yeah, right. And you know, being somebody, you know, being a tribal member myself, you know, I moved from the Siston Wahpeton Sioux tribe. You know, it's just an hour south of Fargo. But I moved here to Bismarck, and, you know, there were so many challenges that I had. There's no sense of a place to go to, like what we're used to seeing in the bigger metropolitan areas across the country. There are actually Indian centers. And I know that the federal government had funded Indian centers in these bigger metropolitan areas. Los Angeles, Chicago, Minneapolis. There's many more, but those are just some of the ones that I've been to myself. But, you know, knowing that growing up, going to powwows, you know, outside of North Dakota powwows, growing up in my youth, you know, I've been around and I have family over in Los Angeles, for example. And I actually went there, you know, in my mid-20s, after, you know, leaving there as a youth. I went there and really didn't know how to navigate after being gone for so many years. Of course, I had family there, so I had housing to help me get started. But I asked for the Indian Center, you know, and my family just knew to refer me there. They said, you know, they'll go there, they'll help you kind of navigate this larger community. That's what they're there for. They're to help you kind of get on your feet, you know, figure out employment, where the jobs are, maybe with resume building, just kind of things like that, and just really figure out the city and kind of help you meet all your needs and where to go to do that. So those are typical things that we know are around in different metropolitan areas. So when I came here, that is exactly what I had done, was looked in the Yellow Pages for an Indian Center, American Indian Center, Native American Center, something having to do with the different types of names of what we're called. It even went under tribal, and, you know, there was only the North Dakota Indian Affairs Commission. This was back in 2001. And, you know, I actually called it because there was nothing else available. So I called it, see what they could offer, what they could, any tips, anything. And they really did. And of course, they're a state agency division and could not help any at a service level. So that is a personal experience just right here in Bismarck that I had experience in needing some supportive services. So that was kind of a hindsight perspective that I can share today as to why I pursued this. But that's only one reason. There's been multiple other scenarios along the way that have led me to start this up here in the Bismarck metro area.
So you got this grant from the Northwest Area Foundation, and I'm talking to Lorraine Davis, who's the director at the Native American Development Center, and also with this new organization, Native Inc., that just got this grant that we're discussing. The grant said it was to, you know, look at the needs of the Native American people in Fargo and Bismarck and Grand Forks. So how are you going to do that? What's the plan?
Yeah, so we've done some preliminary work already. I have been working, you know, in community development finance and in housing development, working in, you know, these different arenas here over the last 5 years. I guess you could say I have, you know, a lot of colleagues through a national network that, you know, have their own Native organizations. And so through that network, you know, building these relationships, I have been able to obtain technical assistance. So for example, specifically relevant to this community needs assessment, I basically put the legwork together of all the players that are involved in community development, like in actual infrastructure. You know, that would probably be the place where, you know, since I've gained this knowledge and these skill sets and these relationships, I did not want to just only benefit Bismarck Native Americans. I wanted to use this this knowledge and this my career background to benefit other Native Americans in other metropolitan areas in our state as well. You know, of course, Fargo is only an hour north of my homelands. So I think of how many tribal members, you know, are in need over there. And not just our tribe, being the Siston Wahpeton. I'm very not much about being for one tribe, including my own. But, you know, just knowing that, you know, trying to think about others all the time and thinking about putting myself in their shoes, I wanted to share this knowledge and this skill set to benefit other Native Americans in other metropolitan areas as well.
So you're going to be doing this needs assessment. You've obviously, from things you've said so far, you've got, you know, a general idea of some of the areas of need, but this grant is to help you identify that, I guess, even more. Are you door to door, reach out through social media, have meetings? How are you going to find needs?
We do have a consultant that is on board. They have done community development projects on the reservation, conducting community engagement sessions. So And typically what that is hosting focus groups, having, and we don't call them focus groups. We associate them with what we would call as Wopitas. I guess that would be a reference for, you know, the Lakota or Dakota people. But basically what Wopitas are community feeds, you know, having large community meals accessible to everybody. Everybody welcome. Come and join us. It's a sense of family, community. When we're in urban areas, even though we're all from different tribes, we feel closer, even though we're from different tribes. We feel as if we're one tribe. We have a challenge right now in trying to deliver community engagement sessions during COVID-19. But for right now, what we're doing is we're putting a work group together because we have to get pretty savvy on how we're going to implement community engagement during this time. So we know that'll be through technology, but just really all of the pieces, preliminary planning and how, you know, we're going to get this done. Also those leaders that are from those metro areas are going to be involved.
So you are going to end up at the end of this, you'll have a report and it's going to say, well, we've been assessing the needs and here they are. And then you're hoping to take that and build with that to the next stage. What do you see the next stage? I guess it depends what the assessment turns up, but how is that going to go?
What we do know is that Bismarck is going to pursue the project. So we have to prioritize because there's not enough resources, to pay for, you know, when we talk about infrastructure development anyhow. If it comes out that the community needs assessment for Bismarck metropolitan area, for example, says we need, a housing project, whether that be for youth or whether it be for families or seniors, what have you there, or cultural community center, or, we need a place for, like a incubator for businesses, Native owned businesses. There's a lot of talented Native artists. In all kinds of ways. I mean, not just the art type of, you know, we have singers and dancers and performers and, you know, all of this different variety. And there's such a need for, you know, for a lot of different things. So we would definitely be first starting with Bismarck. So we would be acting upon the results of the Bismarck metropolitan area and actually building infrastructure and human service needs or programmatic needs. But we would keep the information for the other metropolitan areas as our next project, next in line.
I was wondering, do you know, I guess I could look this up, but what is the population of Native Americans in like Bismarck and Fargo and Grand Forks? Is Bismarck got the most, or do you have a sense of how they lay out in the different cities?
Yeah, I do. Of course, writing grants, we always have to take a look at that. And so I have, and Bismarck metropolitan area has the largest, it's twice the size of Fargo. Fargo's the second.
So you're hoping to build on this project and have future projects in Bismarck, and then you see eventually Fargo and Grand Forks too, is your hope?
We are, like I mentioned earlier, we are involving key leaders in those communities, now at this early stage. You know, we want to see them because they're the ones involved in those communities, right? They're the ones that really have that purview and those connections, and, you know, work with, work amongst, you know, different agencies and organizations already in those communities. So we want them to be the lead, the voice, kind of the host when we go there to, and also they're the mobilizers, right? To get the participants, to get the tribal constituents to attend, to be even be aware that we're coming and we're hosting these community engagement sessions. They're going to be the ones that get people to show up, right? So, because they're connected and those are their communities. What we want to do is really bring our skill set You know, we've been doing this for a long time. We've been, you know, as I mentioned again, like knowing how to get it done is very important. So this has been a vision. This is what I've intentionally built my skill set towards. You know, my first background, you know, first and foremost, I always say is my lived experience, you know, in knowing how to design, in knowing the need. So that's the programmatic need, but then there's also that infrastructure need. And then just, you know, my career along the way, it's been housing, it's been family housing, it's been affordable housing. It's been supportive services at United Tribes Technical College. And actually the affordable housing process, how to manage them, how to, you know, how to get them funded. So that whole development piece. And then it went on, you know, to, you know, health and human services, working at Indian Health Service at Fort Yates Hospital when I moved beyond United Tribes. And you know, the vision, really this aspiration to start something and meet this need here. Just, you know, the homeless thing was always, to me, it's like, we'll never achieve good health. We'll never achieve preventing suicide and addiction and hopelessness, right? All of these other social ills are results of poverty, right? And then poverty is what leads to the homelessness. And so I feel like there's just this big gap, you know, nationally, 78% of Native Americans live off the reservation. Right. So, and then I feel like then we're not in this space. And so what happens is we never obtain our culture. Like we live away from our homelands for all different kinds of reasons, right? Some people are moving away because there's not enough jobs and housing, or sufficient housing, you know, on the reservation. Some like myself, you know, I moved away on purpose. There was a lot of, trauma. There was a lot of, you know, there was a lot of feeling of hopelessness there. There was a lot of violence, you know, that was associated with alcoholism. So I feel like it was, I needed to escape. I needed to have a better life. I needed to come. And so I chose here because there's connections here for me. I have connections through my grandmother who is from the MHA Nation. But yeah, so that's kind of really kind of bringing in, you know, why it's so important for us to be able to obtain our culture. At the same time, we're living in two worlds. You hear that a lot. And, you know, it's hard for mainstream to understand that because they don't live in our world. They never have and never will have to, like we have to, right? So when we come from our homelands and the way that we do things, it's just the way that we are just as people and this, I mean, just social norms and things. And although we know that there are some negative things that we don't want to carry on. And that's what we want to address through our programs. However, there are some things that we need to keep. And some of those things are, you know, just the traditional ways and the ways of being with each other. We need to feel interconnected and we need to revitalize our culture. So by building this community development project, so you think of it as building a village, so to speak, right, in an urban area, then that helps us to be interconnected to each other and then to therefore, you know, sustain our culture and our way and our, you know, our ways of being.
Prairie Public's Director of Radio, Bill Thomas, in a discussion with Lorraine Davis, Executive Director of the Native American Development Center.
In this time of social distancing, we need connection more than ever. I'm Dave Isay of StoryCorps. With public radio stations, we're launching StoryCorps Connect, a way to record interviews with loved ones remotely for the Library of Congress. Learn how at StoryCorpsConnect.org.
For many Americans, the biggest stories of this moment are at your door. You know people affected by the coronavirus. You can hear the voices of protesters. And during an economic crisis, you still need to pay the bills. For clarity on what you're seeing and hearing, there is NPR News. Listen to Morning Edition every weekday.
Morning Edition, weekdays beginning at 4 a.m. Central on Prairie Public.
This is Main Street on Prairie Public. I'm Doug Hamilton. Bruce Berg spent years teaching English in Jamestown. Now retired, he writes and voices commentaries for us. And today's piece is a bittersweet take on aging and memories, titled blow by blow.
It's hardly a keen observation to note that members of my high school class are taking leave of the hurly-burly of this life and heading for other places. My classmates are passing on. Recently, I received a call to notify me that my grade school boxing buddy had died. Our recess bouts in the fifth and sixth grades involved two kids who were fascinated with the science of fisticuffs. Not the harshness and brutality of boxing, but the skills needed to snap a left jab, learn the transfer of weight needed to toss the right cross, and learn the balance required to throw a stunning left hook or uppercut. Winter was the best time for our boxing engagements, with heavy coats and mitts, and our rules made sense. No blows to the head or below the belt. And I know we didn't get angry. Nobody cried or tossed a fit. We jabbed and hooked and clinched and shuffled ourselves into the company of Joe Louis and Sugar Ray and Billy Kahn and Jersey Joe and Gus Lesnovich. We knew all the names that we heard on WNAX Yankton on Friday nights, straight from the Madison Square Garden or the St. Nicholas Arena. For us, it was action on the Lincoln Elementary playground, back in the days before playgrounds were the source of, different kind of violence, when kids didn't threaten teachers, when parents didn't hover and overprotect. Our bouts ended with the recess bell, and we returned to class freshened by a good workout and respect for the punching power that landed on chests and shoulders and arms. My grade school boxing buddy is gone now, but the memory of heavy coats and gloves and left jabs and hooks and some fancy footwork on Lincoln's playground remains. And I'm sure that many teachers today would not respect the boxing sessions. Stop fighting would be the response. And would there be someone on the staff who would know the difference between fighting and boxing? Tommy Trosseth and I knew the difference, and I believe we were enriched by the knowledge. Today, so much entertainment for the young is provided by outside sources, video games, TV, movies, and organized sports. These activities have their place. But I still hearken back to a playground where two kids flailed away at each other and had such a good time doing it. So long, Tom. We may never be able to explain what we called fun, but we didn't need to, and we didn't try. This is Bruce Berg, Jamestown.
We hope you've enjoyed Main Street Weekend, and we invite you to join us for Main Street Weekdays at 3 Central, 2 Mountain, right here on Prairie Public. You can also listen live online and access our Main Street podcast anytime at prairiepublic.org. In the meantime, enjoy the rest of your Sunday.